Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
Good morning to our listeners here on Long Island's most listened to radio station, Walk 97.5. My name is Dan Leveler, president of Suffolk County's largest independent labor union, Suffolk AME. It's a pleasure to welcome you back to Suffolk Matters, where Suffolk County meets the men and women who work at Suffolk County AME. Our focus this week is on a controversial topic, and that has gained steam over the past 2 years with the potential impact on every resident in Suffolk County, and that's fossil fuel divestiture from the public pension system. AME, we read the tea leaves, so to speak, on this last December, and published what's now widely read and as a research study on the financial cost of fossil fuel divestment. The reason why we commissioned this report was simply to see what the impact would be on our membership and the people in Suffolk County when we received the report back, to make sure that we had an understanding of what this situation would mean. We realized it had wider implications, and we released it publicly. So joining me this morning is actuary and CEO of Foster & Foster, Brad Heindrichs, and that's an independent national actuary consulting firm that specializes in providing innovative retirement and health and welfare consulting services to sponsors of public, private, and multi-employer benefit plans. Brad was the independent actuarial expert who analyzed these findings for AME's white paper. And Brad, I just want to welcome you to the show this morning.
Thank you very much. It's good. It's great to be here.
So first and foremost, I'd like to maybe just go in a little bit on your firm and the services you provide, so they have some understanding of who they're hearing from.
Sure. So my firm consists of a whole bunch of actuaries, and for your listeners who don't know what an actuary is or does, an actuary is somebody who puts a price tag on risk, whether it be for insurance purposes. The actuary set insurance premiums for health insurance, car insurance, or life insurance, or in this case, or in my case, for my firm, we analyze the risks of pensions and the impact of different drivers of pensions. And in particular, in this case, we're talking about investment performance, which happens to be the biggest driver of pension costs for the plans in question, or actually any public pension fund across the country. So we work for about 400 or so public pension systems in the United States, which represents about 15% of all public plans out there.
That is pretty massive. And again, this is this isn't guesswork. You know, this isn't, you know, here's what we think is going to happen. I mean, you guys have a very simple formula: investments and investment gains and contributions equals what the benefits will be. And that's a very simple way of expressing What the complications of your job actually entail.
Yeah, looking at a little differently, Dan. I mean, the benefits are defined by a formula. These members are going to be promised something, a certain monthly amount that's typically based upon their income and years of service, for as long as they live once they get to retirement. And the actuary, what we'll do is we'll figure out what we expect these benefits to be, and then in combination of determining, you know, what the, so those benefits we are projected by us, and they're going to be paid for, as you just mentioned, by one of two things. They're one of two sources: either the contributions from the members or the cities, which means the taxpayers, or by investment returns. And so the more money that we make on the investment side, the less money we have to contribute. And so the taxpayers that are out there listening, you should know that this investment stuff, as it pertains to these public pensions, it's the biggest driver of the taxpayers' pension costs.
Right? Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, you know, here in New York State, unlike some areas in the country, but in New York State, I think we're close to 90% on the ability to cover the cost of pensions being driven from investment versus being driven from contributions, which, you know, would be taxpayer burden.
Yeah, and that could be, depending upon which plan you're looking at. I mean, I would say, in general, you're usually looking at between 60 and 80%, but in New York, in depending on which plan you're talking about, it could be an even higher percentage. But obviously, the percentage of the benefits that are covered by investment performance versus contributions is reliant upon how well our investments do, and that really gets down to the brass tacks of what I think we're on the phone talking about.
Absolutely, yeah, and you know, thanks for walking us up to that, because the fact of the matter is, when we initially started this conversation, that, you know, there may have been a few eyebrows raised out in the world thinking, you know, well, why wouldn't we divest from fossil fuels? And I think that needs to be part of the conversation, what we're highlighting is an aspect of this conversation that doesn't get spoken about that much. Everybody knows about global warming, yep, and the impact to the environment and everything else. And we're no different. We're not saying that that's untrue. We're not taking a position on that. What we're doing is trying to help develop a means to get there and make the changes that essentially mankind needs to make. It's not a question of New York or the United States of America. This is a global issue. But we had to have a conversation and look at what's being proposed. And what's currently being proposed is divest the common retirement system, New York State common retirement system, from fossil fuels. Take the money that's invested in there out, and that will somehow defund fossil fuels. And that's, you know, essentially why we wanted to do this white paper, because right off the bat, there's alarm bells for me. That doesn't make sense at all. I see immediately someone with a different morality than our state comptroller grabbing up those investments and not caring what the outcome would be.
Certainly.
So why don't you speak to us a little bit about what the consequences would be to the average taxpayer across the state of New York, or basically anywhere, specifically, you know, that we're talking to people in Suffolk County, but just generally speaking, what the effect of an underfunded pension system is on the public.
Oh, well, when pension funds become underfunded, or they create what they call a huge unfunded liability, the pension costs can double, they can triple, they can quadruple, what you'll see across the country is cities having to increase their millage rates and raise taxes in order to pay for these pensions, because there are pension laws out there that will not allow the pensions to be retroactively reduced. And so pensions are promises, and when you make promises, you have to deliver on those. And so you can't go back on these promises.
Correct. You know, and it would be difficult to do, because
the benefits are going to be what they're going to be. We've got to be able to fund them, and we're going to either fund them by investment returns, or we're going to fund them by extra contributions, which means extra tax increases.
Certainly. So essentially what that comes down to is, if the investments don't perform, the cost of providing these benefits that were promised to the employee who's already done the work, they've accepted the job at the lower pay for this benefit, and therefore they are protected by law to get that benefit, it means a tax increase or a reduction in services that people rely on.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And what's amazing, as an actuary who lives in the weeds of the numbers, you know, when we were looking at this plan specifically, you know, taking almost $1 billion and divesting it and moving that $1 billion from a set of investments that's historically returned, say, 8% a year, into an alternative asset class that might be returning something around 3% a year, you're looking at, after 5 years, having a loss of over $300 million, which in turn would have to be made up by contributions over time, and just extrapolating it further over a 20-year period, that compounding of interest, 8% versus 3%, 8% versus 3%, that gap becomes over $2.8 billion.
Amazing.
And so you can see how well, it may just seem like, well, 8 versus 3, big deal. It becomes a big deal because these pension funds are forever. They will last forever. They will be funded one way or the other. And to your viewers out there, or listeners, I suppose, you should know that there are consequences for moving money from investments that tend to be higher performing into those that don't typically provide greater returns. You know, one other thing I will say about this is that if you think about the way a city is typically run, the general assets of the city, they can't be invested in equities at all. They can't be they're invested typically in cash,
right?
And so the pension fund is really the city's oftentimes the only avenue that the city has to be able to realize solid returns on taxpayer monies.
Right.
And so that makes this issue an even bigger deal for taxpayers, because the rest of their tax dollars are effectively sitting in cash or in very, very low interest-bearing accounts.
So, you know, when we talk about compound interest, and I think a lot of people that are familiar with the term think about it in the positive. You know, you're getting a 5% return on $100. Next year, you've got $105. And now you're going to get a 5% return on $105, which will yield slightly more. And that keeps growing and growing and growing. And in this instance, when we talk about compound interest, it's actually a loss of 5% when we go from something that would stable, you know, so almost $1 billion invested in something that will give a stable return of 8%. Now taken out of that 8% stable return and placed into an untried, untrue, kind of fluctuating return around 3%. That's a loss of 5% every year. And when that 5% adds up, and again, I apologize for those who got it the first time around. I'm just kind of recapping to make sure that, you know, we're being very clear on the point. We're talking about a loss of 5% off $1 billion every year that has to be made up by the taxpayers.
Yeah, it's a snowball effect. It's a little bit, you know, thought about differently, Dan. It's kind of like if you go out and you buy a bunch of items on your credit card and you can't make the payment, and the credit card company charges you interest.
Sure.
That interest is steep.
Right.
And then if the next month you can't make the entire payment, that deficit just grows with interest over time, and before you know it, you're up to your eyeballs in credit card debt. It's something similar here, where these funds, if they're not earning the returns that are expected, that they need to be earning, then the pension funds can get away from them from the standpoint of the annual costs and the debt that pension funds can create, and the only way out is to raise money from taxpayers, because cutting benefits is difficult. You have to do it prospectively, and you can't do it retroactively.
So then, you know, all new hires would not be able to receive such and such a benefit.
Correct.
Which then makes it more difficult for them to come in and take the job in the first place, because the incentive to take the lower paying job is the benefit.
That's right.
So just in speaking about pension systems in general, and, you know, obviously we're talking about New York State pension system and how it relates to the people in Suffolk County and across the state of New York, and what that impact of fossil fuel divestiture may have on the whole system. But can you give us an example of state systems who were unable, or where they were unable to maintain solvency?
Well, yeah. There's if you look to the great state of Illinois, they're one that is really or actually probably closer to you, New Jersey. those two tend to be the shining star, or maybe that's not a very good term, but when it comes to being an example of pension systems that have benefits that they just can't possibly fund. And when they try to fund them, they're not funding enough. You know, taxpayers at some point get to their breaking point.
Sure.
And then what are you going to do? And then at some point, then laws are challenged. Are these promises really enforceable promises? And you have a colossal mess. And so Illinois and New Jersey are two places that immediately come to mind that have had some serious pension funding issues. The pension funds themselves that mechanism isn't broken, but by not earning the returns in the funds that are necessary to keep them afloat, when coupled with the amount that the taxpayers are willing to provide, you know, that contributions plus investment returns equals benefits plus expenses equation gets out of balance, and you get a system that tends to be broken, and that's when you really start to read about them in the newspaper. So, you know, kind of bringing this back home, I'm certain this is really the tip of the iceberg as to why you're bringing this about is to really raise awareness of what's being contemplated here. If these pension funds start earning, you know, 3% a year as opposed to 8% a year, then the taxpayers are going to be having to contribute a whole lot more to keep the pension funds afloat.
Correct.
Because you just can't lower the benefits fast enough to make up the difference. And even if you were able to, then you wouldn't have anybody who wants to be a city worker, whether we're talking about a police officer, a firefighter, a general employee,
sure,
or whoever we're talking about.
Sure.
Hiring, you know, attracting and retaining good people would become nearly impossible,
and the
taxpayers would suffer that way.
Yeah, and it would be very difficult. You know, you talk about what we're talking about here in the state of New York is a defined benefit plan.
Yep.
There are defined contribution plans, and it's very difficult if you were to take away the defined benefit plan and go to defined contribution to, you know, again, retain all of those jobs that you're talking about and have each individual responsible for handling their own finances to perform as well as when the collective gets together and pools their money and pools the very best people to find the very best investment opportunities to realize that return.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you've seen too some of the same studies I have, which show that that pension fund investment managers typically will outperform individual 401k investors by
considerably
to the tune of 6 to 8%
yeah,
per year.
Yeah.
And so again, another compounding of difference there.
Sure.
You know, the pension funds are really good for the local economy. We want to keep those things going, but we have to make sure that they are invested appropriately and funded so that we don't get into any situations as we've just been discussing with some of these other states.
So when have you noticed, you know, obviously we talked about the size and scope of your involvement in these pensions across the country. When did you first notice political divestment initiatives starting?
I guess there was never a time where I just pinched myself and said, "Oh, look what's happening suddenly." It's really just been topic that's come about. I mean, it's just kind of like if I asked you, when did global warming become something that was an issue that everybody talked about? It's been ongoing for a while, and I understand the flip side of the argument. The folks may say, "Well, we don't want to support these kinds of this sort of industry." Your point is well taken, and I think that we've actually talked to some economists who agree that say that that you know, if you don't support them, somebody else will, because they're out looking for returns.
Sure.
And so, but I do understand why some would object to that. But again, it needs to be spoken about with the understanding of the consequence of that action.
Sure.
And that's
sure.
really what I think we were really trying to bring to light here, is to say, okay, we get it, we understand where you're coming from. The economists are telling us that where you're coming from, it might be your moral stance or what have you, but from the perspective of the pension fund and your individual taxes,
which has to be a factor,
there's going to be an impact.
Yeah, and it has to be a factor in making the decision. We can't make decisions like these just based on one thing. And you know, there's a number of things that we can talk about in the report, but I just want to, before we wrap up today, I just want to give you an opportunity just to speak, if there's anything that really stuck out in doing this analysis on the fossil fuel divestment, if there was anything that really stuck out for you that you think, you know, it just wouldn't be common knowledge.
Well, I think that from a lack of common knowledge standpoint, I mean, really what I bring to the table is quantifying this real difference. I mean, really, if someone was out, if they were going to invest their own money and I told them that this investment might get somewhere around 8, this one might get around 3, and I told them that this eight one might be a little bit more risky, but I think you're going to get a higher return. I can see how somebody may choose one versus the other. But when you're talking about a pension fund, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, not just a few million.
Right.
The difference between 3 and 8 and compounding, it's that's the flashing light here, is the power of compound interest over time. The difference between 3 and 8 on $1 billion over 20 years is $2.8 billion in terms of difference. If we earn 8, we will have $2.8 billion more dollars in the pension fund than we would if we were earning 3, just on this amount we're talking about. That's incredible. That's really the message that needs to at least be considered before you make this move.
Absolutely. So we've been speaking this morning with Brad Heindrichs, CEO of Foster & Foster. And Brad, if you wouldn't mind, just share some information about your company. You know, if you want to give a website, I don't know, email address, personal cell phone number,
sure.
Whatever you're comfortable with.
If anybody wants to continue this dialogue, I enjoy that, or to drop me a line. Our website is www.foster-foster.com. That's www.foster-foster.com. There's a way to send emails or inquiries, and I'd be happy to respond to those. Our firm is not really in the business of talking about global warming versus not. It's not really for us. It's not an environmental discussion. It's really more about our focus is making sure these plans are properly funded, and we want to try to make them as affordable as possible to the taxpayers while providing guaranteed and sufficient benefits to municipal employees all across the country. That's really our mission, and I look forward to hearing from anybody out there that wants to continue the dialogue. Otherwise, Dan, I've enjoyed the banter with you today and over the last several months, and hopefully these findings will at least continue the dialogue as this issue continues to unfold and is dealt with not just in Suffolk County but all across the country.
Certainly, and again, thank you, Brad, for joining us this morning, and thank you for the work that you've been doing on behalf of this particular issue and what you do for all people, because again, at the end of the day, I think you're looking out for taxpayers and you don't really care where they're from and what their background is and what their political affiliation or anything else.
You're there
for the taxpayer.
We're trying to stretch the taxpayer dollar as far as possible, and also provide as big a benefits as we can for these for these folks that, that either keep us safe at night or are working hard for the cities that they work. So.
And I think if nothing else, our listeners have learned that the word actuary means a little bit.
It's not just a place where they bury dead actors down.
Sure, sure. An actuary is not that. And, you know, there's a little bit of hero in what you guys do, you know. In this particular line of work that you guys do, you're helping people that don't even know what the term actuary means. And that's God's
that's right.
work, right?
I will tell you, and I've never been called a hero. But I look forward to going and telling my family tonight.
Absolutely.
That's what somebody said.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Brad. Right. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us this morning on Suffolk Matters, where we'll continue to bring you news and views you won't hear anywhere else. That's every Sunday morning, 7:30 to 8 o'clock on 97.5 FM.